အမေရိကန်ပြည်ထောင်စုဝါရှင်တန် DC မြို့တော်ကနေတိုက်ရိုက်ထုတ်
俄军轰炸乌克兰中西部，至少六人死亡。美国高级官员访问亚太岛国，所罗门群岛和中国威胁将是重点。美国朝鲜问题特使金盛抵达首尔，商讨应对平壤策略。
各位观众朋友大家好，欢迎收看美国观察，我是林森。首先来关注今天的重要新闻。新闻头条首先还是来关注乌克兰。乌克兰西部官员表示，利沃夫市4月18日遭受导弹袭击，导致该市至少6人死亡。俄罗斯将近两个月前入侵以来，利沃夫曾一度躲过极端暴力的重创。利沃夫州州长科技茨基说，三枚导弹击中军事基础设施，而另一枚导弹击中一家汽车轮胎修配厂。在乌克兰其他地区，从交战区撤离平民的努力星期一连续第二天被迫暂停。乌克兰副总理维尔舒克在社交媒体上发表声明说，俄罗斯占领军违反国际人道法律，不停地封锁和炮击人道走廊路线。乌克兰总统泽连斯基指责俄军对哈尔科夫的居民区发射迫击炮和其他炮击，是故意制造恐怖，而南部城市马里乌波尔的乌克兰守军拒绝了俄军要求他们放下武器的最后通牒。目光转向白宫，由白宫美国白宫国安会官员率领，包括美国国务院国防部与国际开发署官员，本星期将前往亚太岛屿国家访问，将在夏威夷的美军印太指挥部会见地区盟友，之后将会访问斐济、新巴布几内亚以及所罗门群岛。所罗门群岛去年与台湾断交后与中国建交，今年所罗门群岛政府打算与中国签订安全协议，引发周边国家的担忧。那么有关详细情况，请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅，
是白宫呢，在这个4月18号星期一宣布，由白宫国安会负责印太地区的协调官坎贝尔来领军，以及国务院的东亚与太平洋事务助理国务卿 Critton Brick 来率领的代表团呢，来出访亚太地区。那么代表团的成员呢，除了这两位之外，还包括了美国国务院国防部以及国际开发署的官员。那么代表团呢，将会先前往夏威夷，在夏威夷那边的这个美国美军的印太司令部呢，来与这个军方的高级将领会晤，还有跟这区域重要盟友还有这个伙伴们的代表呢进行会晤。不过呢，白宫并没有说明到底所谓的区域盟友代表的是哪一些国家。那此外呢，他们将会前往之后将会前往斐济、新巴布几内亚以及所罗门群岛，同时呢也将会与亚太岛屿论坛的成员国会晤，来讨论整个亚太的局势。那么这白宫的声明当中表示，这一次代表团出访是接着美国国务卿布林肯今年2月前往相同的地区之后的这个行程。那么将会继续来深化拜登政府的印太战略，来促进这个整个印太地区的安全稳定以及繁荣。那么当中呢，这个行程里面的所罗门群岛是特别引起了关注，主要原因呢，就是因为他们与台湾断交之后，然后与中国进行了建交。那所罗门这个总理之后呢，还表示呢，对中国有很多比较亲近的态度。那么在这个2021年的年底的时候呢，就所罗门群岛的内部就发生了这个民众大规模的示威抗议活动，也就是认为这个马来塔省呢，这个省里面的这个省长还有居民呢，他们认为说，当时政府宣布与台湾断交与中国建交，并没有咨询当地当省的他们省民的意见，那他们认为他们是比较倾向台湾建交的，那认为这个做法是不对的，因此呢发起了这个示威活动。那当时呢，示威呢也引起了中国的关注，中国政府甚至还提供了这个军警的方面的这种所谓的镇暴的 装备给所罗门群岛的政府，让他们来平息这一次的骚乱。那么这个所罗门群岛的战略地点呢，它就是位在澳大利亚的东北方，距离2000公尺的地方。那么最近呢，特别引起关注，就是他们有一个与中国的安全协议草案啊被宣布了。在当中呢，这个所罗门群岛可以要求中国派遣警察、武装警察、军事人员跟其他的执法人员跟军队，中国也可以派遣军队来保护在所罗门群岛上中方人员以及中国主要项目的安全。那所罗门群岛的政府表示呢，正在与扩大更多的国家安全合作，多元化发展安全伙伴关系，当中也包括中国。对此呢，这个澳大利亚的外长已经表示非常担忧这个安全协议，所以看得出来美国这一次特别要前往所罗门群岛，包括国安、外交以及这个国防部的官员一同前往呢，肯定就是要来跟所罗门群岛谈他们与中国来进行的安全协议的协商。林森，
要以另外一个方面，我们注意到白宫已经宣布了，将在下个月，就是5月12号，将主办第二届全球新冠疫情峰会。那么，介绍一下这方面的一些详细情况。
是。与此同时呢，白宫在星期一也宣布了要来举办第二届的这个全球新冠疫情的峰会，那么是以这个线上的方式来举办的。那我们知道呢，第一届是在2021年的9月22号来举办。那么在宣布之后呢，本次的峰会将聚这次主要的世界各地区的代表，主要是加勒比海的这个贝里斯，还有德国是 G7 的主席国，以及印尼是今年的 G20 的轮值主席国。另外一个参加的塞内加尔呢，则是非洲联盟的主席国。那白宫发言沙奇呢，在4月18号星期的白宫记者会上啊，他是说美国将会持续的领导世界对抗新冠疫情。那么也透过这一次的新冠峰会呢，将会是这个加倍来终止急迫的大流行病，还有要对未来的大流行病跟其他的健康威胁做出准备。那么他也说呢，美国将会继续的强调这个美国领导世界对抗疫情的角色。那最后呢，在沙奇也在呼吁说，美国国会也要尽快通过经费与法案来帮助全世界对抗新冠疫情。林森，
好的，谢谢耀毅，这是美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅在白宫的连线报道。好，接下来关注朝鲜半岛局势。美国朝鲜问题特使金盛4月18日抵达韩国首都首尔，开始与韩国相关官员举行多个会谈，针对平壤不断试射导弹甚至可能恢复核试验寻找共同的对策。与此同时，美国和韩国按计划举行年度联合军演，但是为了不刺激平壤以及防范新冠疫情的传播，本次军演将再次以电脑模拟为主，不涉及调动军队进行野战演练。金盛抵达首尔时对媒体表示，他仍然愿意在任何时候不预设条件的与朝鲜方面会谈。平壤一直拒绝与华盛顿谈判，称美国仍实施敌对政策，包括保持制裁和继续军演。一天前，朝鲜宣称刚刚对用来携带战术核弹头的导弹实施了一次试验，称发射的武器显然提升了前线远程炮兵的威力。下个月上任的韩国当选总统尹锡悦表示要强化与美国的同盟关系，并会考虑从美国购买更多的萨德反导系统。预计金盛将与尹锡悦的接班团队会面。美国彭博新闻社报道说，由于奥密克戎变异病毒疫情在中国不断的蔓延，及其应对封城措施已经损害经济运行。在中国的外国商会和公司的代表4月18日会见了中国商务部部长，讨论防疫限制措施对外国在华企业的影响。报道说，中国欧盟商会主席伍德克说，中国商务部部长王文涛4月18日会见来自美国、欧洲、日本和其他商会的代表。伍德克表示，这次会议是外国商界人士与中国高级官员分享他们的担忧的机会，说明当前的形势的紧迫性。不过，上海美国商会谢绝评论，中国美国商会和中国商务部都没有立刻回复置评的请求。
当今，真相为重，掌握全球脉动，只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指一动，信息即来，追踪政治动向，体验真实生活， 世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 VOA Plus。
年逾八旬的人权活动家霍洛维茨夫妇多年来在弗吉尼亚州的家中接待过大批来自中国的民运人士，为他们提供帮助。霍洛维茨律师在里根政府时期担任要职，他引述当年见证苏联解体的经验说，看似稳固的独裁政权实则缺乏根基。他预估中共未来也将走上如同苏联般解体的道路。霍洛维茨呼吁西方国家团结一致对抗独裁政权，独裁者只有在看到民主的强大时才会退缩，普京和习近平需要看到民主的强大。
Met and hosted many Chinese dissidents in this mansion. Could you share with us the experience? Who have you hosted before and do you keep in touch with them?
We've been very, very privileged to work for human rights in countries which have no democracy. It's very pleasing to get to know these people, to be friends with these people, to help these people. But it's also often terrible because people come to our house, we love them,They go back and they get murdered or they get put in jail. And we've had that happen many, many times. It makes us understand all the more the value of freedom and the importance for our children and grandchildren to live in a world without dictatorships. Democracies never wage war on each other. And the spread of democracy, which took place when Reagan was president, and I worked for Reagan,We are working as best we can to make sure that it happens throughout Asia especially.
Could you tell us how was the U.S.-China relations like during the time of the Reagan administration and how the U.S. coped with China? Was China a very different country during that time?
Yes, it was. And during the Reagan administration, there were relations, but the focus was on the Soviet Union, not on China.The great mistake that the West made was putting China into the WTC and giving China a free trade with the West. The businesses said, come on, we want to have cheaper clothes. And if China's economy grows, why, freedom will happen.That was the premise of American policy 15 years ago when China was looking to get free trade rights in the West. It was the greatest foreign policy mistake that the United States has made, surely, in the last 50 years. We have got to have stronger trade policies with China, and many of us are talking about different kinds of trade policies.That will be more effective than what's been tried. But we made a mistake in thinking that if there's more economic growth in China, there will be more freedom and democracy. That hasn't happened. And many great members of Congress, like the Congressman Frank Wolf, Congressman Chris Smith, others, they understood it.But the American business community, they just wanted cheaper goods. and they won that battle and gave muscle and strength to China, which was a great mistake for the United States. So we have to cut down on China's trade rights, and we have to do it quickly, and I think, and I hope we will do it. When Ronald Reagan dealt with the Soviet Union, he dealt with the human rights aspects of what the Soviet Union was doing. And people said, why do you care about that? We should be talking about nuclear arms, or we should be talking about ruble stabilization. And Reagan understood, first, that it was the right thing to do, to be on the side of people that were being persecuted, that that's what democracy should always do. But he understood that that was the weak point of dictatorships. We have not. And I want and hope we will get an American presidency that will understand the power of raising human rights issues as major, major issues. I want an American president that will tie China to every prison camp in North Korea. I want an American president that will fight harder on the Uyghurs. And I'm very pleased that the Biden administration is talking about Uyghur persecution. I want an American administration that fights for the rights of house churches in China, because I think that's a source of progress. So I want the lessons of Ronald Reagan's policy towards the Soviet Union applied to our policy towards China. And I hope that will happen. I'm sure it will in time. And I will tell you, based on my experience in the Reagan administration, that if the United States and the rest of the world are silent and allow Putin to take over the Ukraine and Kazakhstan, the people of Taiwan will be at enormous risk. The dictatorships always look to democracies to see if they're strong, if they protect their friends and their allies. When they see that the democracies protect their friends, as Reagan did, they back away and they are not quite so dangerous. But when they sense weakness, they move all over. And China is now trying to threaten Taiwan and are going to say, oh, the United States won't act if we threaten and take over Taiwan. So what's happening here has direct effect. History teaches us that, on the freedom of Taiwan, on the freedom of many countries that Putin and Xi want to dominate. But we also know that in helping them, we make it harder for dictatorships to march onto other countries. If the world had stopped Hitler early on, we would not have had World War II. And I think Xi and Putin need to understand that the West is strong, and that the West will defend its allies and friends.
After Xi Jinping came into power in 2012, it seems like he's tightening the control of the Chinese society more and more.
Well, Xi Jinping is not going to agree to democracy. He wants to become more and more powerful, become, you know, the 21st century Mao Zedong, the 21st century Hitler. And I would even say the 21st century Stalin, when I look at what he's doing in Tibet and when I look at what he's doing to the Uyghurs and to the Christians. So dictators never voluntarily give up their power. But I think there is weakness. Those roots of that strong, seemingly strong tree are very, very thin. And with a great blow of wind, just as what happened to the Soviet Union, the dictatorship will, in my judgment, fall. And it could fall very quickly if we get the internet freedom, if we get great American leadership like Reagan provided. The Chinese know that. The CCP knows that. I wish we in America understood how strong we are so that we don't have to appease Xi Jinping and stood up and spoke. And we're proud of what we had and understand how much strength that we have.
Both of you are strong advocates on religious freedom. How do you see the religious freedom situation in China right now?
Well, the government doesn't promote Christianity. The government tries to smash it down. And many of our friends, I mean, we get people coming to our house, the wives and children of a pastor of a house church in China, who was arrested and put in jail for 15 years for having a cross on his house church. But that persecution is not stopping Christianity from growing. And that's why she has been worse than anybody, worse than Mao even, in trying to stamp out the Uyghurs and the Christians and the Falun Gong. He knows, he's very smart. He knows what keeps him in power and he knows what threatens him. And so the fight for religious freedom in China is a fight for democracy for everybody in China. And of course, the persecution is getting worse and worse under Xi Jinping. At the same time, despite all the persecution, Christianity is growing. There are probably 100 million house church Christians in China. 100 million. And it's growing. And that is what religious faith brings. Some connection to a higher power, not to some government official. And that's what governments, that's what the CCP is afraid of. And that's what she understands. And I wish American politicians understood it more so that we could stand with the religious groups. The most important people for the peace of the world in the 21st century, in my opinion, are the religious minorities in China. And we are proud to be on their side and help them as much as we can.
What are your views on the treatment of the ethnic minorities in Xinjiang and also the Chinese government's denial of the allegations?
Well, look, the Chinese government has as its major objective that people as they live should focus on the government as the source of their hope, as the source of their dreams. To the extent that people look to religion and religious faith rather than government, dictatorships are weak. It's not as if these religious groups, whether they be the Uyghurs, the Falun Gong, the Christians, have armies or spies. The dictatorships know that if people are not afraid of the threats and the bribes on which dictatorships live, that they are weaker. We are Jewish. And we understand that in the beginning of the 20th century, dictatorships needed to persecute Jews. Why? Because they lived a life outside of the threats and the bribes that the government, that the Nazis used to stay in power. And so fighting for freedom of religion is fighting for freedom for everybody. I remember when Chinese heroes would come to the United States. They'd say, please fight for Chinese Christians. I'm not a Christian. But if the word goes out that the West is fighting even for Christians, then labor unions and artists and everybody in China will gain strength to be free. So the fight for freedom of religion in China and the fight to protect religious minorities is a fight for the freedom of everybody in China and, in that sense, for the future of the 21st century.
In the future, would you ever want to visit China? Under what kind of circumstance would you like to do that?
The great issue for the 21st century, and there's nothing even close in importance for the history of the world, is that China and the United States compete with each other to see who builds better televisions or cars, but not compete with each other in military ways. The 21st century could be more bloody than the 20th century unless China stops being a dictatorship and becomes a democracy. Maybe not exactly like we are here, but not a dictatorship. That's the great challenge of the world. And these human rights heroes who are feared by Xi and the CCP regime, they're the ones who create this freedom. That's how the Soviet Union came down. When I worked for Reagan, people thought, oh, my gosh, the Soviet Union will last forever. And it's always the case. Democracies always seem divided and dictatorships always seem unified and strong. Reagan understood, and I know that it's just the opposite. Democracies are very resilient. Dictatorships seem strong, but they don't have deep roots. And so I believe that in due course, the regime in China will collapse just as the regime in the Soviet Union did. Now, here's the important thing. People think that for progress to take place, you take one step after the other until you reach the goal. That's not how history works. And the dictatorship seems strong. And then one day, like it's overnight, what was impossible becomes inevitable. That's how the Soviet Union collapsed. And with the right kind of American leadership, with a Reagan-like president, and I believe we're going to have one, with someone like Margaret Thatcher in Great Britain, democracies will again show their strength. And the power of democracy is going to force change. China's such a great country. And China should be out there competing with the rest of the world to build better computers, to be a place where millions of people come to visit all of the time. It will make China stronger, not weaker, to be a democracy. It will push out the dictatorships. So there are many things left for great democracies to do to bring about change in China. And the great thing Deborah and I try to do is to support the heroes who are protecting Uyghurs, Falun Gong, Christians, and others and peasants who are being persecuted in China. I'm absolutely confident that the spread of democracy in China will take place just as it did in the Soviet Union. And when that happens, Deborah and I will have a wonderful visit to China.
好，节目的最后，我们来看美国总统拜登和第一夫人吉尔·拜登18号在白宫主持了复活节滚彩蛋活动。虽然是阴雨天气，3万名孩子和成年人仍然兴致勃勃地参加了滚彩蛋、找彩蛋、阅读、才艺表演等多项活动。由于疫情，这项可以追溯到1878年的白宫滚彩蛋活动中断了2年。
Generations, presidents and first ladies and kids just like you celebrated the Easter egg roll together, racing and making crafts, reading books, and of course, meeting the Easter bunny. Education never stops. The determined spirit of education is what we wanted to honor in this Easter egg roll.So we turned the South Lawn into a school community. Today, we hope you learned by going to the reading nook, roll some eggs, and most of all, have fun.
We weren't able to host this Easter egg roll last year because of the pandemic. But this year, we're finally getting together again. And it's so special.It means so much to see and hear the children and all the families show up to be here today. The joy and the laughter is something that has been a wonderful tradition here at the White House for a long, long time. To all of you, have fun today. Welcome to the White House. Welcome to your house.
好，今天美国观察的全部内容就是这些。感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。